Hello, welcome to the High Performance CEO Podcast, your exclusive access to the winning strategies and leadership habits of high performing CEOs from all over the world. I'm your host, Sebastian Schieke, entrepreneur, CEO mentor, and business angel. Sit back, relax, and don't forget to take notes, because I'm sure you will be able to take many gold nuggets on how to drive your business forward and develop a healthy and thriving work culture for your organization. Welcome to another episode of the High Performance CEO Show. Today, I'm talking to Alex Combesi, and he got an interesting story and a very interesting company. He's the co-founder and CEO of Giscard, and Giscard is a tool which ensures the quality of AI models. So they help data scientists avoid ethical biases in AI models, and they make AI more robust. And I think this is a very important topic in a world where AI is more and more on the rising. So basically, this is what Alex is focusing on. And before that, he was a data scientist and software engineer at the French AI unicorn Dataiku. So Alex, coming from a technical background, turning into a founder and CEO, amazing journey. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Hi, Sebastian. Thanks a lot for having me.
Yes. So can you tell us a bit about your story? So how did you decide as a software engineer to create your own company, your own startup? What was the reason to basically do that step?
So it really starts at a young age. I've been always passionate about technology, reading science fiction novels when I was 10. Actually, Giscard, the name comes from the books of Isaac Asimov, famous science fiction author. And my career, I did not start it out on the technical side. I started out on more the business side, working in finance, then gradually just fell in love with computer science and more specifically the data industry. So I was part in the early days of big data keyword and Hadoop, technologies like that. I was working as a strategy consultant, and it was in 2013, and I thought that these technologies were really amazing, but they were incredibly hard to use. What we've lived these past 10 years is just an explosion of AI, data science, big data everywhere. And I really wanted to understand more. I go deeper in the technology. So I went back to school, went from strategy consultant to become a data scientist. And then I wanted to go even further and became a software engineer. And I was working like really hands deep, writing code to help others to create AI models. So working in various fields that are quite challenging, like time series forecasting, natural language processing, computer vision. There was just really what drove me to entrepreneurship was a pain that I was experiencing really hard in my life as an engineer. So I came to entrepreneurship through kind of scratch your own itch syndrome, but it was really more than an itch. It was not being able to efficiently make sure that what I was doing, because my job was to create AI models, was robust and reliable. And sometimes some projects were delayed by several months just because we were not able to ensure, for example, for time series forecasting models, that they would be efficient. Because you have to imagine that AI models, when you create a library to build them, they are deployed in thousands of different situations and can be very challenging. And you're judged by the business side on the performance. You are also judged for B2C application. You're also judged by citizens and by end users on the fairness of your AI algorithms. So at a point in time, I was feeling this pain and talking to my now co-founder, Jean-Marie. So he did his, after a similar journey being a data scientist, Jean-Marie decided to go to research and start a PhD on AI ethics, right? And he was really feeling the pain of also being a data scientist, hearing this criticism that pretty much everyone is making on saying, hey, AI can be dangerous if it reinforces ethical biases, if it creates discrimination. But coming back again to the technical side and just saying, okay, well, how are we going to fix it? And so that's a combination of really feeling the pain, meeting a co-founder who also agreed on the pain coming from the a really like user technical background that we were like, okay, we are going to build a company. And pretty naturally on my end, coming from a business background and being so hands deep, the way we split our roles was myself more on the business side, Jean-Marie more on the product side, and we got another engineer, André, from Dataiku joining as a CTO last year. And really, it's a learning experience for me, being a CEO, looking after the sales marketing side, being really hands deep, not in the code, but hands deep with the use cases of the customers and understanding like what is the value that we create and how can we reinforce it.
I mean, you touched on a few very important topics. I mean, AI and decision models of AI is something which affects all of our lives. We all have in touch with some kind of AI machines. We have a lot of experience in marketing and my team are running ads. And sometimes there are some AIs in the background clocking ads, you know, for reasons which no one understands, not even people within the organization, you know. It's just a decision this AI bot made. But this is not critical. It's more critical in day-to-day life, you know, where people are involved. Yeah, for example, when you have an autonomous driving, yeah, and this AI has to make a decision in an accidental situation, what to do, yeah, which could affect the life of other people. And there, you need people like you who basically create systems around these AIs to help them make better decisions. Yeah, it's like everything as in life. I mean, you have to make the right decisions. And when you have something to help an AI to do so, it can really create a lot of positive value. And this is what I like from your mission. You also said pain drove you to this, taking this step. I mean, when do we do something? You know, we do things out of two reasons, to avoid pain or to gain pleasure. And pain is often the biggest motivator to take action. This is what drove you. Can you tell us some practical stories of where is your tool used? What kind of AIs and what kind of decisions are these AIs take on a daily basis? And how can you help influence these decisions?
Yeah, for me, that's really what matters, customer stories. I have two in mind, one on the quality criteria, that is fairness and ethics, and another in robustness, so more for industrial applications. For fairness, we have partnered with a company in Barcelona called City Beats, and they are providing a platform for public institutions to spot trends on social media. To do this, they are using a wide variety of AI models to estimate things like gender, socio-demographic indicators. And of course, due to the nature of these models and to the nature of their customer serving the public sector, the risk of ethical biases creates a very clear business risk. In the public sector, rightfully, there is a mandate never to buy solutions that are unethical and to have guarantees. And we've helped them to put in place a suite of tests for fairness on their AI models. And this partnership is really strong. And what they agreed to commit the suite of tests on our platform. So some of the things that we do differently as a tool compared to others is that we are open source, right? And the benefit of it is that we are building a community of data scientists who really, really care about AI quality, up to the point where they want to contribute and show to the world what they are doing, which is, in technical terms, specific tests to really, from a quantitative point of view, say, hey, we've checked these criteria for fairness and we put a threshold and we commit to it. And the good news is that it's a positive feedback loop. So these tests, we are in the process of merging them in our code base, and they will be available as we're open source for other teams that have similar use cases, like ethics of NLP models, to be used. Because the truth is there's a kind of balance between how fast you want to innovate, right, and how reliable, how safe you want to be. We are here to help bridge that gap. Just saying, hey, you don't want to be spending days to write tests, to recreate all of that. You really want a solution where you can continue to innovate very fast while being safe, thanks to pretty much in our vision, which is just to say, hey, it takes you 5 minutes to create a suite of tests that really ensure that you have no worry to have when you deploy AI models. But it really starts with like some specific criteria like CityBits really wanted to work on ethics, and we are now in the process of automating that with them. Because the big challenge with AI models is that models have to be retrained very frequently. And models are black boxes, essentially. When you retrain them, the whole behavior of a decision system will change. And by having test suites in place that are automated, you ensure that if you retrain, you don't have regressions, cases that work quite well, and that suddenly you have a drop. And these things, when we discuss with customers, there's really a lack of completeness of testing methods, because most teams, they have aggregate measures like a single type of test saying, I want accuracy to be on average level above 80%. But you also need to capture smaller signals like tests on behavior that are not necessarily aggregate, but are on smaller slices of data, but would cost money. So, i.e., coming back to the example of our customers, having an ethical bias on a specific variable in a specific model, and that could endanger your relationship with your customers. So that's on kind of a customer story on fairness. On robustness, we are working with another AI provider called AltaRoad. They are based in France, and they build an AI platform to automate processes in industrial sites. It's a very challenging environment, construction sites. You have to deal with machines that are very specific, that operate in different conditions. And we are helping them, not yet on the testing part, but more on how to validate the behavior of models in new conditions. So we are helping them have an interface between their AI specialist, their data science team, and their engineering team, who are really expert in these machines, right? They live the world of construction. And to validate, to simulate changes in the data, to see and evaluate how the model is behaving. And the goal of that is to provide feedback on how to improve a model, right? So kind of a way of having a sparring partner, you know, challenging the model to get insightful feedback. And this worked out very well. And by the way, this is really new, right? Today, kind of a disconnect between AI and business teams. So we're helping to make that connection.
I guess it's too technical, no, for them to understand. I mean, it's hard to understand anyway how an AI is working, you know, how can they make these decisions? What is behind? Yeah, so it's a very technical topic. And then, of course, you need somehow the interface to the business, yeah, and that business people understand this and can really use an AI for their challenges.
Yeah, exactly. And for that, we've invested a lot in explainability tool, because it's really, really key. And going beyond explainability, asking user for feedback, which is very new. To say, hey, I think this AI model is wrong because of this. And giving the right information like explainability tools for people to have educated opinion of AI models.
I think asking users for feedback is very important. Yeah, I met a lot of CEOs of tech companies, yeah, and then often they understand it's a problem that they don't have market fit, you know, for their product. And then I say, hey, did you actually talk to your customers? Did you ask them for feedback? Did you engage with them, really understand their needs? And this is the same as your product. It's always the small, the basic things which we often don't do, you know, like talking, having a conversation, and then figuring out, okay, maybe we need to adopt the way, the direction a little bit, and then we more need with our solution.
100% agree. It's really where I find the most value for building the best product, for bringing the most value to customers. The way we've operated since we had our first version, so it's from March, is we work with a small group, right? Only about 10 customers, but really like, and I'm so thankful because they really, really invested time in our relationship, speaking on a weekly basis, hearing their pain, hearing their feature requests. And on purpose, we didn't want to first work with a big group because we wanted really to have the time to build this relationship with the initial customers. And now, like further down the line, I'm so thankful because this feedback that we are starting to integrate in our product, now that we are increasing a bit the pool, so we are going from 10, call them design partners, to about 20 by the end of the year, we are seeing that the value of the product and the easiness of onboarding is getting easier. But I think it's key at the beginning to when you're really working on your product market fit to focus on the quality, right, of relationship, not necessarily on the quantity.
Yeah, definitely. Whenever product fits, which has the right quality, then you can scale up and serve a larger amount of people. Exactly. Where do you see AI developing? I mean, more like on a product context. How do you see this in the next couple of years?
It's interesting that you mentioned products, because it's really what we are doing is bringing the product mentality to AI, because that's why quality matters, right? For end users, it's not the quality of the AI code that matters. It's really the AI product, which is a decision system, different layers. You have the model itself, you have the data, but also, and it's very important, you have the interface. So the product that the AI is used in. And what we're seeing early adopters is really people that see AI as their main product with product methodologies. Like you have AI product managers that are reviewing models. And all of the methodology from software engineering is really inspiring, right? Where you do code reviews, you do user tests, right? And always my question, because I worked in data science team and I worked in software engineering teams, and I'm always puzzled to see like data science teams that skip some of the steps, like skipping the review phase, skipping the user test phase. And for me, in 2 years, I'm starting to see this with more advanced tech companies, the methodologies between machine learning and software engineering will become more aligned, right? It's just for us a more natural way that pretty much all engineering practices go. The more stable, the more trained people are, and with a more business value of the engineering output itself, the more normalized it will be, right? And that's why now you have in more mature companies different roles appearing. When I started out in this journey, you had this phantasmatic idea that you had a data scientist that could do everything. Right. And now we're seeing it's more a mix, a balance of skills between data science, AI product managers, machine learning engineers, QA teams, site reliability engineers, etc. So that's more the bottom-up change that I'm seeing from the base, like the people that are technically doing AI.
What does it mean for normal people? You know, I mean, we talked a lot about the development side, which is very important, but what does it mean for my kids? You know, how does AI affect our day-to-day life in the future?
Well, the truth is it already affects all of our lives.
It does, yes.
There's a stark figure from McKinsey. 4 years ago, there was just 1 out of 5 companies using AI, right? Mm-hmm. Last year, it was 3 out of 5. So there's a majority of organizations around the world that use AI. So AI is already everywhere. And coming back to like the issue for society, as you rightfully point out, you're starting to see real incidents because of AI models that are not performing as expected. There's a website called AI Incident Database. I encourage you to look it up. It's really interesting. It collects all the public incidents, so it's in the press. So you have to realize it's just the tip of the iceberg. You have over 1,200 incidents reported. Pretty serious things coming from what you said, like self-driving cars in accidents, but also companies losing money because they have pricing algorithms that have underestimated some market factors, fairness issues, etc. The good news is that there is a big push for regulation and standardization. So we are partners with AFNOR, which is the standard body in France, and we're helping out to draft part of the ISO standard for AI. And meanwhile, there are really, really great and smart people working on the regulation, the EU AI Act. So there's a push that will mandate really when it's, so the EU AI Act is likely to be implemented in 2 or 3 years, but it will have a huge impact like GDPR did on all companies around the world, right? Because the EU AI Act is like any AI that touches on an EU citizen. And you're starting to see similar projects in the US, in Japan, in the UK, right? kind of the AI bill of rights. So these topics, they are coming from the base and they are coming from the top down, from the regulators.
Very interesting. I hope the industry will not be over-regulated in the end, yeah? So I guess finding the right balance is very important.
Yeah.
But I really liked, I mean, when you said 4 years, I really reflected, it's actually right. I mean, even a normal office support, you know, what you have nowadays, yeah? There are pages where you can create videos, you know, where you just have an AI avatar and just give them a text and then they create a video where someone is speaking to you, yeah? So you could use this to create a training material, you know? You could create hundreds of videos in a short period of time, which look like actually almost real people just with an AI, yeah? Which I find amazing, you know? I mean, the amount of value you can create with such a service, yeah? I said, hey, you need all these videos, which cost you a fortune and weeks of or months of work, and now you can do this with an AI system, yeah? Or when you create copy text or translation software, I mean, you name it, you know? There's so much available nowadays, which makes our life easier. I find fascinating. And you are right. I mean, these 4 years, the last years, really, it was a kind of a big leap in terms of availability for normal end users like me, without knowing what's really going on in the big industries, the big software companies creating big AI models for various services. So you have a very interesting area where you are focusing your work on. How do you see your company develop in the next couple of years? What's your vision where you are heading to?
Yeah, so we are heading to be the number one European player and the field of quality for AI. So in France, there's a huge company called Bureau Veritas, which is one of the leaders in quality for physical products.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to build the same European player for AI quality. If you think about it, can I tell a small anecdote?
Of course, please.
So my very first professional experience was in a factory that checks the quality of all construction materials. I was on the department that was checking the quality of plumbing equipment. I had another fellow department for testing toilets. They were testing walls, like literally you had people paid to try a flamethrower on walls, right? Before they get sent out to construction sites.
Yeah.
If you think about it, you know, every physical product that we buy, right, every food that we ingest, they go through quality testing.
Needs to be tested, yeah.
So why not AI, right? Mm-hmm. The only challenge is like how to test AI, and that's what we are working on. But in my opinion, there's all like the industry is a bit scared, saying, "Oh, we don't want overregulation, etc." And mm-hmm. I agree. You know, it's like you don't want to slow down because the pace of innovation, what AI is creating in positive ways to our life, yeah. Amazing, right? But how can you have like both, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, it will happen in 2 years. So we are working on the technology to make that easy and as, you know, automatic as possible.
Very interesting conversation, Alex. I could talk to you for hours, basically. Very important topic. Is there anything you would like to add to your audience? I mean, where can people find you? Where are you hanging around online?
So you can find me on LinkedIn. There are quite a lot on Twitter as well. And there is an AI quality summit next Wednesday in Frankfurt. It's a really big deal. We are going to meet a lot of fellow-minded people that care about building robust and ethical AI. So if you're in Frankfurt next Wednesday, come see us.
If you're in Frankfurt, I mean, I'm in Frankfurt, so I might take this opportunity.
Awesome. Would love to.
But thank you so much for your time, Alex. Very interesting story. And I wish you best of luck in creating the right tools to help AI make ethical bias or to avoid ethical bias decisions and keep on with the good work, Alex. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Sebastian.
Hey, this has been the High Performance CEO Podcast. Join us again next week for more winning strategies and leadership habits from high-performing CEOs worldwide. If you have any questions or feedback on today's episode or would like to be a guest on my show, email us at success@sebastianschicke.com. We would love to hear from you. I'm Sebastian Schicke. Thank you for listening.